This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome my professionals, Thaddeus McCotter, American Greatness, David Drucker, The Washington Examiner, John Fund, The National Review Online. Gentlemen, I begin with the story of the census and the reapportionment. David, the surprise to me was California losing a seat. I understand we were supposed to expect it anecdotally for 10 years with all the talk of taxes and discomfort and homeless. But still, to lose a seat, is this a harbinger for California or is this the result of a series of one-offs? Good evening to you, David.
Good evening, John. And look, I guess we'll have to check in 10 years from now and see how things look. Maybe in California we'll get the seat back. But it was expected, and California still gained in population, but it gained slowly. There was a lot of out-migration, and it lost a seat for the first time since statehood, and that is a very big deal. And it's already sparking a lot of anxiety as incumbents in California wonder what their seat might look like. Now, their new seat might look like. There's an independent commission in California that draws these lines, spread evenly, five Democrats, five Republicans, five independents. The seats have still tended to favor Democrats generally because it's just such a Democratic state. But for wonks that are into map making and like the insidery politics that goes with members of Congress trying to figure out where they're going to run, should they run, sometimes we'll have a member-on-member primary like we had after the last census in California. Even though they didn't lose a seat, there were some two high-powered Democrats from the San Fernando Valley of Los Angeles that ended up having to fight it out. It's going to be a very interesting thing to watch. I think, you know, the issue with California going forward is how much of this is a trend that continues versus, you know, plateauing, if not reversing and going back up. And I just think it's too early to tell.
Mr. Fund, your state of California, is it okay, business as usual or something changed, Mr. Fund?
Business is leaving as usual.
Okay.
Look, Gavin Newsom is probably going to survive the recall, but I think it's going to spark, for the first time in years, a genuine debate about the future direction of California. The last time I went back to the Bay Area, I visited Oakland, where I lived briefly once. Oakland used to be a working class, but generally, with a place with a lot of safe neighborhoods, good amenities, lots of culture, wonderful weather, and now it looks like something out of Mad Max. It looks like homeless encampments have taken over large swaths of the city, and I think the breakdown of civility, of the veneer of civilization, the soaring crime, which is going way up in the Bay Area, and the general stress of trying to make a living in California continues to make it a place for the very rich and the poor who can access government services. The middle class does not have a welcome mat out for it.
Thaddeus, you have a question for our professionals.
The other side of the coin, gentlemen, were you surprised by any of the states that picked up seats?
David?
No, I wasn't. I mean, there were a couple of states that we thought might lose that didn't. Believe Minnesota might be one of them, if memory serves. But ultimately, I mean, I think the trends in population and growth, Texas, Florida, the Southwest, and the continued decline when it comes to population in places like New York State in the Midwest, I mean, that was something that held. And so I don't really think this particular redistricting was all that surprising. You know, I think what has probably occurred over the last 5-6 years or so that people did not account for is that a state, in particular Florida, that has been a perennial swing state, has lately, you know, been purple trending red. And that is a problem for Democrats, even though Republicans continue to have problems of their own.
John?
I think that it's fascinating to see that every set of data that we used to accept at face value is now challenged. The ranking Republicans on two key congressional committees with jurisdiction over the census sent a very sharp letter to the census director saying, we want to complete methodology of how in the world states like New York and Illinois that had apparently lost a lot of population, lost much less than expected. And was there some adjustment that was made based on attempts to protect the privacy of voters? They sometimes extrapolate from neighborhood surveys. And exactly how many people did you reach in the census, and did you try to make up for those that you couldn't get because of COVID? So the census numbers are going to stand. I doubt a court would ever overturn them. But the fact that they are not accepted at face value and are challenged as perhaps being politicized is fascinating.
Two star turns during the week, gentlemen. The president making an address to Congress, virtual Congress, and then Tim Scott of South Carolina responding in the traditional ceremonial response from the opposition party. David, trillions and trillions and trillions is all going to be worked out, I understand, between the House and the Senate. But how was Mr. Biden's address received in Washington? Was there comfort? Was there relaxation? Was there concern in general?
Well, it depends who you talk to. I think in one regard, his speech was reassuring in that it was just so normal. And I'm not using the word normal necessarily to praise it. I'm just saying that it was what you would expect from a liberal Democrat. And there weren't any, hair-raising statements or asides other than the amount of money that the president wants to spend. But, that's a policy debate. And so on one hand, it was reassuring that the fights that we're having now are normal fights. And look, Democrats are pleased with it. They like the ambition. Political parties never want to play it safe. I mean, tacticians within the parties sometimes want to play it safe and pragmatic, but parties in general want to take advantage of power. And so I think Democrats are happy to see Biden swing for the fences, and they can negotiate from there if they choose to. And, Republicans are beside themselves, but, this is what Democrats like to do. Naturally, Republicans disagree. They will try and do something about it. But it was remarkable for how unremarkable it was in the context that for 4 years plus, the person in the White House constantly said things that made people, do a double take.
And Tim Scott, very high marks that I'm reading, David. Is that true in Washington as well?
Yeah, so far he's avoided the rebuttal hex. And he performed well. I'm not surprised. He is a very gifted speaker. He has a lot of personality. He's very likable. And even in disagreement, he smiles. He's just not an angry politician. He will run for president in 2024. It'll be interesting to see if he has any legs in terms of his political viability in the early primary states outside of his home state of South Carolina. But I think Republicans in particular were pleased, and they think that he is a good messenger for this particular moment in history when there are so many cultural battles being waged, and a lot of Republicans are hungry for a face to put forward that is not an old white male.
Mr. Fund, I was surprised by the word compromise somewhere in the next 48 hours after the president's speech, something about seeking to negotiate with the Republican Senate on his infrastructure and jobs plan. Does that suggest that the president is now more open to conversation than he was in the stimulus package, John?
Well, the good news for the president is in the first few months of the Obama administration that he served in, the massive Tea Party movement had already begun and was having protests all over the country. That hasn't happened now. So the opposition against him is somewhat disorganized. However, a Washington Post poll taken just before his speech found that his support among independents approval rating was 41%. That is 13 points below the percentage of independents who voted for him. So I think the president's internal numbers are showing his support softening. And therefore, he wants to perhaps not risk everything on a pedal-to-the-metal strategy that doesn't involve any Republicans.
And Mr. McCotter, your question for our professionals.
To Mr. Fund and Mr. Drucker, based on that, do you have any inkling on what it is that are driving the independents away from President Biden at the present time?
Mr. Fund?
Sticker shock. Yes. Even people who are non-numerate understand there is a difference between our discussing things in billions a few years ago, and now we're discussing them in trillions. They don't quite get the magnitude, but they can figure out something's changed.
David?
Yeah, I tend to think that the crisis at the border is causing him more trouble because it's one of those glaring cases of what appears to be mismanagement and ineffectiveness. And while I think John Fund is correct in that a lot of Americans are going to have some trouble digesting the trillions that President Biden wants to spend, I don't think they're as predisposed to be concerned about it as long as they're not paying for it. I think that what they want to see out of the president is effectiveness, and that is one sort of glaring problem that he has. There are pictures that go with it. It's being reported heavily, and I think that is a bigger deal for him in terms of his political standing.
I'm speaking with my professionals, David Drucker of the Washington Examiner, John Fund of the National Review Online, Thaddeus McCotter, American Greatness. When we come back, let's go to the border, because there's news and there's transparency and then there's ambition at the border for the Biden administration. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.